Hello, and welcome to episode 20 of the WimLex podcast. In this episode, Alexander will zoom in on underwear. Not his underwear, but the underwear designed by Christian Larsson, who's the co-founder of premium underwear brand CDLP. Christian is also a renowned Swedish filmmaker and storyteller. This episode was recorded in Stockholm, and Alexander and Christian will talk about different business models, e-commerce, and how you sell underwear online. So sit back, relax, and listen.
Hello, Christian. Welcome to the WimLex show. Today, live from Stockholm, in the co-working space called Alma, maybe? I don't know. I don't remember. 100%. 100%. Mm-hmm. Today, we're talking about underwear and the retail industry of underwear. Before we deep dive into that, please explain us a little bit about your business and who you are.
My name is Christian Larsson. I am the co-founder and creative director of the premium underwear brand CDLP.
So, and what is your background? So you're in underwear industry now for like 20 years or?
No, not at all. I've been in the underwear industry for about 3-4 years since we started this project. My previous background is actually, and still is, I'm a film director and photographer. So my background is predominantly in commercial filmmaking. I started my career in filmmaking as an editor and ventured over to being a director's assistant and then directing. I shot projects in fashion and music videos for Sigur Rós, Kylie Minogue and that kind of stuff. Moved into bigger commercials and did campaigns for Cartier, Pepsi, Beats by Dre. And then I started an underwear business. But it was handy to have a background in filmmaking and especially storytelling.
So, and where's the connection between filmmaking industry and underwear industry? Do you saw like there was a lack of underwear in filmmaking? Might be a case.
Well, it's actually very logical. When it comes to the underwear, there was being in photography or filmmaking, you travel a lot because shooting film or photos in one location is not so exciting. Yeah. So you travel around the world, it was very obvious that. The missing quality link in my luggage was really bad underwear. So that's the logic between starting an underwear business. And then secondly, why it's good to have a background as a filmmaker and photographer is storytelling. I think creating a brand nowadays, especially, it's all about telling a story. So.
Yeah, but what I don't get so 100%, maybe you remember our last podcast guest, Jess Fleischer from mm-hmm. Son of a Tailor. So he explained really well why there is a need for tailor-made t-shirts. Mm-hmm. I got this. I have one on me today. In the underwear industry, though, I'm a very, very, very low-level underwear buyer, I would say.
Right.
So I know some of the main commercials. Of course, I know there's like underwear labeled with Calvin Klein, and there's even an assortment on Amazon, my favorite online shop in Germany, even for underwear.
Yeah.
So where's like the... Is there like a lack of quality if I would be like a more sophisticated underwear buyer? Mm-hmm. So is there a lack of quality or is it something?
Yeah, why do you start an underwear brand? Well, it's absolutely a good question. I think you're a typical person, a typical guy that maybe not care so much about your underwear. And why is that? Well, I think that one reason is that you haven't experienced great underwear. That's one reason. It started with me and my best friend, Andreas, who's the co-founder. We were traveling quite a lot together and sharing hotel rooms, as you do when when you don't have the budget, and because it's fun to share hotel rooms with your best friend, you hang out in underwear. And one day we looked at each other, like, are you serious? What are you wearing? Like, what is that? So the design of the underwear was one thing, the visual design. It was, you know, always like big logotypes everywhere, crazy funky patterns and quite a horrendous design. That was one thing. And when you travel a lot, you start to care about, the few garments rather to have a really good quality rather than a lot of things. So, and the quality of men's underwear have really not been that great. So that's when the idea was born to found an underwear company, because we saw that there was an opportunity to, one, make a quality garment in an industry where it hasn't happened very much product development in 20 years. And secondly, to design it in a different style, an understated, a bit Swedish aesthetic. And thirdly, to create a brand that would look different in an also quite homogenic world of underwear brands.
Yeah, okay. So can you tell us a little bit about the structure of CDLP? So how many people are working here? How do you do it? Where do you produce it? How do you design it? Why is it better now than the underwear you owned in your filmmaking career?
So the story went on from that as an idea into exploring more what had been happening in the underwear industry. And funny enough, 90% of the underwear in the world is made out of cotton. Mm-hmm. Cotton is not a great choice for fabric for underwear. And why is that? Because it absorbs moisture. It's bad for the environment, the excessive cotton production that we do.
But there's like good cotton and bad cotton, right?
Yeah, sure. But when it comes to underwear, it's bad cotton.
Okay.
Yeah. in general. Cotton also doesn't hold color very well. It doesn't last very long. The only kind of great thing with cotton is that it's really, it feels great when it's new and when it's dry, right?
Okay.
So there were options, and it's been happening a lot in the textile industry for the past 20 years, but it felt like underwear has always been kind of left behind. All the big brands, they also don't care so much about their underwear business. They have produced it on license. So a lot of the big brands, they are actually producing in the same factories in China.
So you're doing like male underwear. Is there no brand or manufacturer focusing on male underwear only? It's all like license deals.
There's a couple of our competitors, actually two brands in Switzerland that are doing it quite well. So we went to China, we visited these factories, and we saw that there's an opportunity here to make something different in a new fabric, in a new design. Mm-hmm. Fast forward, we ended up in Portugal, where we found this incredible material that we do all our collection is. It's called Lyocell. Lyocell.
Tell us more about Lyocell.
Yeah, so Lyocell is a really interesting fabric. It's compared to cotton, it's a fully sustainable fabric. So it's made from wood pulp.
What is that for our German listeners?
Yeah, it's a fiber derived from wood, energetic forest making, fast growing trees. And you derive the fiber, and it's created in a closed loop process. So it's very, very eco-friendly and sustainable. And some of these kind of sustainable fabrics, they lack the premium feel, So mm-hmm. it's a compromise between feel or experience and the sustainability. But the nice thing with Lyocell is that it's actually even finer to wear than cotton. It's an extremely beautiful and nice material.
I have one here. I showed it in my camera.
So yes.
It's probably hard to see the difference between cotton and Lyocell on camera, right?
And then it has a bunch of other great features compared to cotton. So it transports moisture rather than absorbs it. It holds color extremely well. So if you wear black underwear, you wash them 5 times, they turn gray.
Yeah.
Lyocell absorbs color so nice. So it's solid colors for a long time. Mm-hmm. And it's extremely soft, it's extremely breathable, it's also antibacterial, and it just feels great.
And this is like a Portuguese thing, the Lyocell? Isn't that not available in China?
It's an invention from Austria, actually.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, so it's a patented technology to create the thread. Mm-hmm. But we make our fabric in Portugal. So the thread is imported to Portugal. And
so even if you want to, you cannot get it in China?
There are some copy versions of the technique,
okay.
But the one we use is sourced. The thread is sourced from Austria, and then it's knitted in Portugal.
But if it is so good, so why isn't it used for like other
by other underwear makers?
Not only underwear, but also like t-shirt makers or trouser makers, whatever.
Well, it's great for jersey, so it's quite flexible. Yeah. And your t-shirt, you don't want it to be too flexible.
Yeah.
But there are some people that use it for t-shirts as well. We are actually exploring that route as well. But for underwear, it's fantastic. So why don't other underwear companies use it so much? Because it's more expensive. So
if you compare it like on a cotton level, it's like 100% more expensive, 200% more expensive.
No, it's about 25% more expensive.
Okay.
For us, creating a premium product, it's okay. It's also okay because we are our business model is to sell predominantly to direct to consumer, so we have a higher margin that way. So we can afford to create a garment that is made from a more expensive fabric.
Okay. How do you sell then?
How we sell?
Yeah, what is directed to consumers? Do you have like a pop-up store here on the Stockholm main station?
No, direct consumer, online? I mean our e-commerce. Our e-commerce is still 70% of our business is our own e-commerce.
Ah.
But our strategy has from the start been to, basically when we had finished the product and we designed our packaging and our brand and everything was felt like a great product and we launched it, we put it to the market. We only launched with two styles. We were confident that we needed the validation from traditional wholesale retailers for a new product like this.
Yeah.
So we worked really hard to get into the top retailers and get the product kind of validated that way, to not only be a direct to consumer e-commerce brand that says, you know, look at us, we're doing the best underwear. We knew that ourselves, but we needed someone else to validate it for us. Our strategy has been to sell in traditional retail as well, and that's actually working really well for us. So today we are selling with some of the top retailers like Barney's and Selfridges in the US and the UK, and they're super important in sort of reaching new clientele. Okay. Also, I think because underwear is a category that you buy kind of spontaneously. You know, if you're buying something else in a department store, you pick up some underwear as well.
So are you able to talk about your revenue size? Or because if you are like already in Sweden and US and wherever, it sounds really big. So that's something, a step usually done by businesses after they've reached a certain level of maturity in their home market.
Yes. No, we're still a small company. We launched our brand 2.5 years ago. We're a very young company. We are, you know, five people working here and another three people abroad. Our revenue was about €1 million last year, but we're growing at the rate of kind of between 200% and 400%. So things are moving really fast.
So how did you do it like in the beginning? If you're like from filmmaking industry and if you're looking in on the picture language on your website, I would say there must be some influences involved in marketing your stuff, or was it like done differently?
It was done differently. We haven't used influences at all, really. The way we put our brand to market was that we were very confident in our product. We only opened our own e-commerce store. We had no retailers at all. After I think we had been in business for a couple of months, we had an order from the UK. This order happened to be a prominent journalist from the Times Style, who also writes for Esquire. His name is Jeremy Langmead. And he reached out to us and said, I'm writing an article about you. So in Esquire, there was an article called The Boxer Rebellion, kind of talking about that there's a new kind of energy within men's underwear coming along, and that we were mentioned about as one of those players. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of like the starting point from when our business started to grow. And with that article, that helped us to get into Mr. Porter. And kind of at the same time, we...
What is that, Mr. Porter?
Say again?
What is that?
MrPorter.com?
Yeah, what is that?
The biggest menswear retailer.
It is? I don't know. Yeah. Never heard about it.
Okay.
No.
Mr. Porter is the biggest menswear fashion retailer. So the menswear segment of Net-a-Porter.
Ah, okay, that is Mr. Porter. Yeah, I've heard about. Okay, yeah. Never, no, I wasn't aware of that. And being listed on Mr. Porter does mean that you're getting a tremendous traction. And
yeah, it was a really important validation for us as a brand to be in Mr. Porter.
Mr. Porter is a style destination. I'm probably a little bit too Amazon focused. Yeah,
incredibly important. They're kind of like the new international. Dignity when it comes to fashion brands. So they've become really, really important into saying what brands are hot and not.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So being listed, Mr. Porter's kind of jumping like over the first barrier.
Absolutely, that was definitely
recognized.
That was definitely a first barrier. Yeah. At the same time, locally here in Sweden, we started to sell in the department store here, which is called NK, which is kind of our equivalent of Selfridges or Harrods. And in 2.5 years, we've gone from last to now we're the best-selling underwear brand in here in Sweden, in this department store.
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
Oh, that's cool. But how do those chains react to your direct-to-consumer strategy? Because usually they are very, very critical to work with brands that are trying to lure the consumer away from their connection. Maybe you're like not the most important brand in the portfolio, but they usually don't want to see Adidas, Nike, or the others really selling stuff, doing like exclusive deals on their websites for the customers. And but that is becoming such an interesting brand, like you are right now, and having a better quality by not having much higher prices. That is only being possible by saving the fee through the retailer. So how do they react to that strategy?
They haven't reacted at all, but I think it's an interesting time now for these department stores. And I'm mentioning department stores because they are kind of the ones that we have selected that we really want to be in, rather than kind of small fashion stores, because that's so low volume for us. It's important from a brand perspective, but the department stores actually sell volume for us.
Yeah, probably the smaller department store, they don't differentiate their own business by selling your underwear brand versus another underwear brand, right? It's
exactly.
Not like the main pillar of their assortment.
No, exactly. But for the department stores, I think it's nowadays when the pressure is on for retailers, I think it's important that they admit that, you know, they can't fight the e-commerce customer. They have to work with the e-commerce customer and understand that it's not either or nowadays. It's, you know, the 360 thing. It's the omni thing, that the consumer wants to buy sometimes in retail and sometimes online. And for us, our product specifically, I think it's for our segment underwear, I think it's really key to be in great stores as well. Yeah.
So what is the street price you set for the underwear? Which model is this one here?
It's been like 29 euro and 35 euros.
29 euros. So the price you're selling it to department stores is probably somewhere between 10 to 15 euros.
Yeah, something like that.
Then I guess. That is not like huge margins, actually,
in terms of absolute
margin, especially for direct to consumer business.
Yeah.
To have, though, the only thing I would hope for is that there's lots of repetition buying, so you can create loyal customers. It's the same discussion we had with Jess Fleischer on Son of a Tailor. So I don't know. I'm probably like here, not your model customer again. But what is like the customers you're seeing at your website, which are a little bit more brand aware and quality aware? So what is their, how much time do they buy per year?
Mm. Yeah, that brings us into this, you know, kind of customer loyalty and repeat buying behavior. And I think we're in a really interesting segment for that when it comes to men, because I think men have a different shopping behavior. They do.
Not to shop at all, for example.
Not to shop at all. Or when they actually shop, they become very loyal and they and true to your brand, and they become repeat.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. I see it because I actually received the Son of a Tailor T-shirt a week ago or 2 weeks ago, and now I
and they say, I'm gonna...
I watched them like two or three times. I'm The price is high compared to other t-shirts. I'm not remember 100%, but it's somewhere between like 45 euros to 55 euros. That's a lot for a t-shirt.
Yeah.
But the quality is superb. The fitting is superb. So probably if you have like 2 to 3 bad weeks during Christmas time when it comes to eating, maybe the tailored fit is not the best idea anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's a no-brainer. Of course, I'm gonna reorder.
Exactly.
Is that the same with underwear?
Yes. 100%. And I think that the Son of a Tailor guys are doing a fantastic job. I'm really impressed with their idea and their execution of what they're doing. When it comes to underwear, I think that there are plenty of similarities. And it's really interesting to see that we can meet a lot of skepticism, you know, like yourself. I'm feeling like you're like, okay, it's underwear. I don't know. I have my favorite style. I'm never going to change. I'm using the same. This is the same we meet all the time from men. You know, they have their favorites. They have they're loyal to a brand, and they stay with this brand forever. And they say, I'm not interested in buying. So what we meet is it's a barrier. So we need to break through that barrier and to try to really convince this customer to at least give us a try. But then, you know, the success rate in when we have convinced the consumer to try us has proven to be really successful. And when they like our product, they stay loyal. So we have a very high repeat customer lifetime.
Like for the first cohort, so you're only like 2.5 years in the business, let's say the first cohort like 1.5 year ago. So
yeah.
What is like their repeat buying behavior? Do they buy like twice a year, 3 times a year, 4 times a year?
Yeah, between 2 and 4 times a year.
Okay.
Yeah, but we're seeing that the lifetime customer value is a really healthy number.
I totally believe that. So what is then your main marketing channels for your website? So where do the customers come from? Of course, like when you had like your articles in the Esquire and the others,
yeah.
Probably that created some PR buzz, but
yeah.
This only holds like a week or so. But
yeah.
Today, if you're looking on similar web or other channels, so what is your what is the most important way to get customers on your website?
So that's an interesting question, because I strongly believe that there is no most important channel. What I've learned now, you know, being an amateur in this from when we started until now, is that there is no one most important channel. The most important thing is to understand that it's a multi-channel idea that makes a difference. You really need to. When we sell the most is when we have an article in an important magazine, and we're in a podcast like yours. And
yeah, of course, it will have like a tremendous impact.
Yeah,
so maybe you should think about a voucher code. The voucher code creates always impact.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm going to give that. If you listen to the end, I'm going to give you guys
a voucher code. We think about a voucher code.
So when we're seeing this, and then we're mentioned by, you know, an important person on Instagram who has bought our stuff and posts about this organically, because we don't do any paid collaborations.
Yeah. Why?
Because we believe that our product needs to be good enough for people to like it and talk about it itself. Otherwise, I don't think you're.
But do you send the product for free to influencers?
We do.
Paying?
Yeah, we do send it for free to people that we would like to wear our stuff.
Okay, and then you just wait. So sometimes they're
exactly.
writing.
Yeah.
Probably they're hoping that you're sending them more stuff.
No, we really don't. But we really see that people like our product, and they come by come back and buy it in our store.
Yeah. Okay.
But the 360 thing is my kind of biggest lesson learned from this business.
So similar what we're saying, though, just open similar web to see where the traffic is coming from for cdlp.com. It's like saying 60% direct. So the numbers in general are a little bit too low to trust it too much, but it's a 20% search. They're probably searching for like premium underwear, CDLP underwear.
Yeah.
But the direct impact is really good. So,
yeah.
But is there something you can do in terms of like standard e-commerce nurturing, sending out newsletter, how to wear your underwear in another way, how to wash your underwear?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you do that?
And paid social is obviously, you know, it's a really important channel for us. But paid social is only about 20% of our revenue, you know, on the numbers. So again, it's like, it's about doing PR really well and communication really well, as well as doing paid social and paid search and all those things. But when you manage to create the best kind of 360 mix, that's when we see that it has a result.
Okay.
And not to forget that within that 360 mix is the traditional retail.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Though maybe if you're like following a couple of the Womlex Show podcasts, so I'm not trusting the traditional retail anymore. So it's like on I would not expect an increasing footfall here in the main shopping street in Stockholm.
For us, we see that underwear is quite big on spontaneous buying and gifting. So in a department store, you know, you have the women buying for their men, or the sister buying for the brother, or, you know, the girlfriend buying for the boyfriend, or the boyfriend for the boyfriend, or whatever it is. This is really important, okay? And then people are gifted, or they try one product, and then they maybe buy another one. But then they come to us in our e-commerce. Yeah. So this kind of loop is really interesting, and that kind of also says something about kind of men's customer behavior. Once you've tried something that you like, you come directly to the source.
Yeah, so your general take on men's buying behaviors, you're not looking for selection, we are looking for a solution.
Exactly. And we see it's quite funny when we've been featured in Wall Street Journal and Forbes. And then we see people from kind of New York, London, you know, either they buy, they're like, okay, I'm going to try this. They say it's good in Wall Street Journal. Boom, they buy 27 pairs right off the bat.
Yeah.
Or
what is your return rate on such an order? Do they stick
with
it?
Our return rate? Yeah. Well, that's a good thing about underwear, that our return rate is incredibly low.
Okay.
It's incredibly low.
So it's below 5%?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
No, it's like furniture.
Yeah.
That's cool. Okay, so how many different like underwear styles are you selling actually? So like 10, 20, 100?
No. So
I can only imagine like 5 or so.
Yeah. We started with only one style, and then we did another one, and then based on that we launched the. We've always listened to our customers really, really closely, and it's really interesting that we have a really. I think that's the main charm with having an e-commerce and being able to talk and listen to your consumers really closely. So all the product development has really been in close connection to our customers. Currently we have 5 styles. So we have the boxer trunk, the boxer brief, the wide brief, the boxer shorts, traditional. And then obviously we're from Scandinavia, so we have the long johns.
Are they really popular? Long johns here?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah?
Of course, you can't survive the winter here without long johns. And our long johns
in Stockholm, yeah.
Yeah, and here, you know, long johns are traditionally this garment that, you know, you wear like big, bulky cotton long johns for skiing, you know. But here, when it's minus 25 degrees certain days in the winter, and you're wearing a suit if you work in, you know, industry where you need to wear a suit, you can't wear these bulky long johns. So our long johns are like super, super thin, and you can wear them under a suit, and you wear them as a single layer.
So just to wrap it up, so how many products are now on sale on your website?
So 5 in the underwear collection, and then we've also launched socks. So we do a bamboo socks, the same kind of concept when it comes to fabric and making. So bamboo socks. So it's a sustainable fabric, antibacterial, and really nice for the environment.
Why can't you use the same material like you're using underwear?
It doesn't work for socks. It's
why that?
Well, it depends on how. It's a jersey material. It's suitable for jersey. It's not suitable for making socks. So bamboo is a great choice for socks.
Bamboo?
Yeah.
So how do you make like garment out of bamboo?
It's the same technology. It's a fiber. Yeah, it's a fiber. So you drive it from bamboo fiber.
And you're producing the same in the same facility in Portugal?
No, it's another factory, but also in Portugal. And then we launched swimwear last summer, and we did a capsule collection, like a small collection. And this year we've finally found a really interesting fabric, also in line with everything else that we do. It's called Econile.
I'm learning so much here about fabrics. It's cotton plus polyester.
Econile is a beautiful fabric. It's made out of regenerated ocean plastic waste. So fish nets and plastic found in the oceans.
Yeah.
We make a really nice nylon. So for swimwear, it's perfect.
So eco-nylon.
Eco-nylon, okay. Yeah.
That's cool. So we tried to... And where does it come from, those ideas? Is that like feedback from your customers saying, okay, please, Christian, we need more sustainable swimwear? Is that what you're hearing from your customers?
No, it's been part of the business idea from the start that when we were going to launch this brand and make our collections, we felt if you're starting a new brand in 2016, this was, of course you have to use sustainable fabrics. It goes without saying. We don't actually make the biggest kind of fuss about it in our communication, but we kind of take for granted that, you know, everything that we make, we try to do it in a responsible way. I guess it's a little bit of a Swedish DNA in us, you know, when we try to think about those kind of things. But I think there are fantastic options when it comes to everything that you make, that there are sustainable options to choose from nowadays. So goes without saying that you should consider.
Got it. But when we're not talking about like the getting a little bit broader in the collection.
Yeah.
So what is then the vision for the brand? So what does it actually mean, CWP?
CWP, it's a nice four-letter word that comes from a French saying, which means cadeau de la providence. It means a gift of providence or a nice gift.
So, if you like, if you show it CDLP to people in France, they get it.
Not just CDLP, but if you say the long word, yeah.
Okay. So, yeah. What is like the vision then for CDLP?
The vision is to really keep developing the underwear as the core, but from there we're using the concept of the fabrics, so the lyocell, the bamboo, the econyle, and we're kind of growing within the. Within the bedroom, it's a simple metaphor. So we're growing into a t-shirt. We're going into pajamas. We're going into a robe. So things that are in around the underwear drawer. That's kind of where we're growing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Got it. Okay. But your vision is not like to own your own fashion CDLP stores, where it's just about the underwear segment.
No. So we've been talking about our brand as a premium underwear company. We're moving, we're broadening that term and talking about our brand as masculine essentials.
Oh, okay. And how do you manage so many different products with such a small team? And how long is like the make to order process then? So is it like, I can't imagine that you have like a big storage room here in the co-working space where you just order all these socks for 2019 and ship them from here. So how does it work?
Everything is stored in our warehouse in south of Sweden.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, but...
that's actually where Amazon is building its new warehouse.
Yes, I know. So we'll meet some competition when it comes to stock management. Mm-hmm. But our made-to-order process is about, you know, it's about 6 months, you know. It's quite long. But
how do you handle then like peak times with Washington Post? No, it was what kind of magazine was it?
Wall Street Journal.
Yeah. There must have been some peak demand.
So. Yeah, there has. So that was a struggle. When we started to get traction, that was incredibly hard for us. We sold out of everything. So the 1 year into the business, we had no stock. And then obviously, what do you do? Well, we raised some funds. We bought a lot of stock. And now we have a lot of stock. management is like, it's really tricky when you have a rapid growth rate. At the same time now, after having worked with our wholesale partners now for a bit over a year, is that our relationships have become better with them. So we're a little bit better at forecasting and understanding what they will buy. And while we were, last minute with everything that we did during the first year and a half or 2 years, now we're a little bit better in kind of planning and forecasting.
Now you know like 2 weeks before.
Yeah, exactly.
Crash. <Okay. laughs>
And not
and,
last
and, and
week.
Where do you get like funding for a company like yours? So we are getting a lot of like questions. Okay, do you know, I have an idea of this and that, and some of those are in the fashion industry. So who's like funding stuff like that?
We raised funding from people that we knew here in Sweden.
So it's like more like an angel funding.
Yeah, it's angel funding from people that we know or people that know people that we know.
Okay.
But people that believe in our vision, and me and Andreas as a partner duo in doing this, everything is done in a close dialogue with them.
So, and one, I think we are asking this question every time. So what is like limiting your growth? You're saying like 204%, that's a lot for, of course, per year, but with some more buzz. So I think it could be, I don't know how big the underwear market is in Europe, but it's probably somewhere in the billions. So maybe 1, 2, 3, whatever.
Yeah.
So there's obviously a chunk of 100 million left for your underwear brand. What is like limiting the growth here? Is it like the production? Is it the sheer assortment? Is it like the access to retailers? The access to influencers?
Access is one thing. Limiting the growth is being able to afford to grow. And I think that's, you know, communication and marketing. Everyone essentially, it's you can grow organically, but you also need to pay quite a lot for growing when it comes to marketing and communication, especially now when paid social, Facebook, Instagram has gotten more and more expensive. You know, we're in bidding war about exposure all the time, you know, so that's a channel of marketing is becoming more and more expensive. So that's one thing that is holding back growth. Secondly, for us, it's production. It's really hard to make that work. We have a really good partner now, but it's been a lot of struggle in this 2.5 years. And I think everyone in this business have the same struggle. It's really hard to make it work and to remain quality with that kind of growth. So we're putting a lot of effort into that, but that's definitely a challenge too. And then thirdly, it's competition.
So are there lots of other underwear brands rushing now into the market with the same vision or was like a good product, better produced, blah,
no,
blah, blah?
You know what? I think in the underwear market, we've managed to do a really nice job in slicing our own kind of way of portraying a lot about our brand is the way we communicate our visuals, our films, our collaborations that we've done, from everything from Tom of Finland, who's an artist, to Sting, the artist. So
he was wearing your underwear.
Yeah. So we've been, you know, we've kind of done our own thing, I would say, as an underwear brand. So that's working really well. But nowadays, I also feel that we're not only in competition with underwear brands, we're in competition with kind of everyone who sells something online, you know?
When it comes to customer acquisition.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, but you can turn into your customer base and make like a private club out of it and say, okay, only like customers are allowed to invite other customers, and then they're getting like a reference, a referral fee, like the shopping clubs did like 10 years ago.
Yeah, no, definitely.
They grew a lot.
So, and that's something that we're doing. We're launching a subscription service.
I was just about asking this. Subscription.
Well, it's an obvious kind of step forward of our business, basically, simply based on that we have a lot of returning customers. So we're trying to automate that process. And a lot of people that find our brand and like our product is that they find that, okay, this is the answer to a need that I have, and we managed to solve their problem. And why don't we just automate that for them?
Though you probably know the story of Black Socks from Switzerland, like one of the only successful subscription models for socks, copied like I don't know 100 times.
Yeah.
So what is your and we can talk about this a little later after the podcast. I highly recommend to listen to their stories.
Mm.
So what is your subscription promise then? So is it like you're getting stuff cheaper because you're buying over the next 12-24 months?
Exactly.
You don't need to wash your underwear anymore because we do it for you.
No, but I think to automate the process, if you're a customer who've already purchased product from us, you know, 2, 3, 4 times, we can make that process automatically. And you'll get a discount from it, you know. So I think it kind of makes sense for everyone involved. Also, you know, we'll supply the news, the new products, etc., to customers. We'll create a club around it, and they'll feel involved in the product development. We have really engaged customers, and we're very, very pleased with that. So we have a lot of...
What was the reaction to the customers? You probably did like a small peer group asking them, okay, will you be willing to join as potential subscription model?
We had a very big number that were interested in the subscription
model.
Yeah. So, but then, you know, we have to launch it and we have to see what they say, but we have high hopes that it will work out well.
Yeah, and then it could include some like exclusive models or exclusive colors only available in a subscription.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's like a. And what do you say that the customers you're having in your database? They are like, it's like a high income customer base. So you customers that are usually not buying at cheap Inditex stores.
Yeah, I would say that people that our customers they are. Perhaps high income, but more first and foremost, I think they care a lot about the products that they buy. They're kind of conscious buyers. Yeah. We really feel that in the feedback that we have and the engagement we have from the customers that they care a lot about what they buy. And I think that would go the same for they buy our underwear, but I'm sure that they have the same consciousness when it comes to, you know, everything else that they buy: cars, houses, music, headphones.
Is there anything other interesting in the data you're seeing? So there's like a lot of subscription willingness. You're seeing you're seeing loyal customers. It's cool, 2 to 4 times spike. But there any other thing you're coming up or any ideas that are saying, okay, that's the thing you could really really boost the business with, apart from moving into socks, pajamas, and all the other, because socks, pajamas, and all the other, that's like the broadest assortment gets, the harder it's getting to be managed.
Yeah.
And if you're looking just in the underwear market worldwide, it's like a $1 billion market.
Yeah.
Getting a big chunk out of that without the pajama and socks,
that
could be good enough. So is there like a strategy?
Yeah, it's not obvious to start to build the collection out to other products. At the same time, we feel we base our product development a lot about the emotional aspect that people have to our brand and to our product. And what does that mean? Well, basically, when people wear our product, they feel a certain way. And that's interesting. So instead of looking at, okay, what is a product that would come after this style or this model, you know, based on fabric or you know, what is a logical development of a product. Instead, we've kind of looked at what is the emotional response that we get from people that wear our product. So, for example, we have a lot of people that that we speak to, our customers, that they feel better about themselves when they wear underwear.
Yeah.
They feel you know, last week we had a guy, he's about 65 years old. He said, "Guys, you're doing a great job. It's the first time in my life that I actually feel sexy in the morning when I put on a pair of underwear." That's a fantastic response to get from a man that wears your product. And that's an emotional kind of attachment to our product that we try to capture and do something about. So how can we keep growing our products with this in mind? So we want to do the same. We want to give the same kind of emotional reward to people that wear our socks, to wear our swimwear. And in that sense, it makes sense to develop a beautiful rope.
I never felt sexy in my pajamas. I don't have one, but that's a good reason. So, yeah. Is there any interesting stuff upcoming in 2019 for you? So, is it now subscription and socks, 2019? That's your core.
No, the underwear collection is still the core. It's still what we keep pushing every day.
Yeah.
The socks as well has kind of grown quite a lot. It's an obvious product that goes with the underwear. This year we're pushing a lot the new swimmer collection that comes now in May in this new fabric.
Male only?
Or? Yes, only male. Mm-hmm. And that's a decision we've taken. We're only going to do men. We've done a great job so far, and we feel like there's more to do in this segment for men. The market for women's underwear is quite saturated, and there's a lot of people there. So. We're good here. So the swimwear, and then this sort of slight extension around the underwear as far as the pajamas and the rope, that's coming for the fall.
Okay. Have you any questions for the Wilmlex audience you want to get feedback on? You can ask them right now, and they can write you an email. I will put your email and the voucher code, and you need to think about the voucher code.
Absolutely.
For these customers.
I think we should first give the voucher code. I think it's Wilmlex Family 10. That's the code.
Okay. Yeah, okay. It might be correlate to a 10% discount, right?
Absolutely, 10% yeah. discount.
Yeah. Don't try a Wimlex Family 100.
Wimlex Family 10 will give you 10% if you'd okay. like to try our product. That would yeah. be great. My question to your listeners would probably be, what is a successful subscription model for underwear? What would make you subscribe to an underwear brand? Nowadays, because underwear subscription, SOG subscription has been around, as you say.
Yeah.
And we're trying to do our take on it. So, if you have any feedback on what people,
yeah, I can tell you the feedback what we've learned in the marketing in the last year. So most subscription models we're seeing is it's 100% designed around your P&L. It's not solving a problem for the customer. It's yeah. like really solving a P&L problem of yeah. not. Of not needing to win the customer back through performance marketing
exactly.
and sending the stuff out, and that's really like it's really hard to figure out. So where's the sweet spot of the underwear USP where subscription helps?
Yeah,
and it's probably the moment when like customers see okay, they're out of the 10 boxer shorts they have left in their underwear storage facility, whatever yeah. it is. So five are kind of below quality already. Yeah. Too worn out.
Yeah.
Too much worn out. And then there must be subscription kicking in. And if you're even looking at the subscription models Amazon is offering, they're just sending you products out.
Yeah.
Without learning how much eye drops you really need, how much whatever you yeah. really need, and having like a subscription model where you really can stop the moment what you want, or having a subscription model just asking you once per month per email, learning how often you respond, and then yeah. customers that are wearing want to have underwear on a more frequent level are getting more emails, other customers are getting yeah. less emails. So this kind of cohort based yeah. mechanism is really hard to adjust. And
yeah.
if you're only like putting in there a button of okay, we send you stuff like every once in a while, and then you can log in and stop your
yeah.
subscription. That's not doing the trick anymore. It's not convenient
yeah.
enough. And that's actually where there's really some test and learn needed. And then
yeah.
it's really you're in like welcome to the very complex world of CRM systems.
Yeah.
And most people are only looking into it from a financial perspective and
yeah.
solving their customer loyalty program
yeah.
a problem, and that's not the case here. So, but listening to what the Black Sox founder is saying and where the limitations of this business models are, that's really interesting.
Yeah,
I should look into that.
Well, thanks for the recommendation. Yeah. I'm going to listen up.
Yeah. Any other questions left? So before we are wrapping up here.
I think your biggest listener base is Germany.
Yet. Yeah.
Yes, and we have very few customers in Germany.
Do you have any Puppen stores in Germany?
No, not yet. Yeah. Not yet. So, but I do think that German men would be interested in our product
yeah.
just as other men. So,
yeah.
how do we launch our product in Germany?
So, I mean, maybe there's some listeners in there helping you to do that. Maybe some department stores owner. So, though there's some retailers. And yeah, I would be very interested into that. And have you been ever mentioned into a German-based newspaper, something like Washington Post, whatever, in Germany?
No, not at all. We sell in two stores in Berlin. They're kind of like the Sohaus store and Wu store. So two kind of cool small stores.
The Sohaus store, of course.
Yes,
yeah.
of course. But if you're a listener and you can check out our brand.
You're
yeah.
open for cooperation models.
Yeah, no, definitely. But I think I would like to learn more about the German market and what German men would require from an underwear brand, especially a new underwear brand. So I'd love to learn more about that. So let me know.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, thanks for all the answers. So I put your email address and the voucher code
please do.
In the show notes.
Yeah.
It was very interesting, though it's a really nice experience to have access now to these underwear. It's like really changing my wardrobe through the Wimlex show. It was really entertaining, and have good luck with 2019 and your swimsuit.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me and us on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks a lot.